Tenant, that Sarah sent Krishna, Dr. Krishna Chandra over here about tenants. And he's also sent another message that this surgery will be a little bit intense. We have to do some quite close to the bone cutting. So he said not to worry about it. It'll be a very short but intense period, but it'll go smoothly and the problem will be solved. So he's always one to give forewarning of what's happening so the mind can settle down to it and we can be peaceful. Okay, well, while we're waiting for him, let's take the time to look at the problem we'll be removing. This is Bakasura, number 6 demon, on our handout. Bakasura, the demon who assumed a huge duck-like form the size of a hill, represents false dealings performed out of deceit, cheating, cunning, and hypocrisy. Without eliminating these, Sudabhakti does not appear. The most clever Bakasura, who is the personification of cheating religion, is the sixth obstacle for Vaishnavas. This is called Nam Aparad, offenses against the holy name of the Lord. Those who do not understand their qualification, but accept the instruction of a bogus guru and engage in the process of worship meant for exalted devotees, are treated as slight people. And those who have understood their ineligibility, yet with a goal to accumulate money and prestige, still follow the process of worship meant for exalted devotees, are called cheaters. Until this cheating in the name of religion is destroyed, one's attachment will not awaken. Such people deceive the entire world by making a show of sectarian formalities and pseudo renunciation. Those who see and respect such proud people's show of external formalities cannot attain love for Krishna and are like thorns in the side of the world. It is to be understood here that one should not disrespect a swan-like person just because he has accepted external formalities that are generally considered detestable. It is the eternal duty of Vaishnava to develop the symptoms of love by associating with and serving devotees or remaining indifferent to external formalities. So this is quite a long and detailed presentation of the anatta that's represented by Bakasura. So what's the essence for us as followers of Mahaprabhu, of those who are aspiring for Braj Bhakti? The essence for us is that cheating religion equals Nam Aparad. You need a little explanation of this. Very interesting. I'll go through it stage by stage. What do we mean? Cheating religion means for us Nam Aparad. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here, the most clever Bakasura is the personification of cheating religion is the sixth obstacle for Vaishnavas. This is called Nam Aparad, offenses against the holy name of the Lord. So often we hear Harinam, Harinam, Harinam Eva Kevalam. We hear this verse all the time. So what are the implications of this verse for us? In this age of Kali, the mouth is the door to factual liberation, Krishna Prem. The mouth is the door. Huh? And what goes in and out of the mouth is of crucial importance in terms of our development of Krishna consciousness, our advancement of Krishna consciousness.
What goes
in and what comes out.
Okay.
Very important.
So,
yeah. And what goes in and out of our mouths is very strongly influenced by what happens with the mind.
That influences the mind.
No, what goes in and out of our mouths is strongly influenced by what's happening with the mind. Yeah, by the mind. If we have firm faith in them, the mind will be encouraged to help us chant with attachment. Yeah. Tell me if I go too fast. You want me to repeat here, Donnie?
Yeah.
Which part?
By firm faith in holy name.
Yeah. If we have firm faith in the holy name, the mind will be encouraged to help us chant with attachment. But if we don't have that faith, the mind will make life very difficult for us. Inattention will be a big problem. So we're told that inattention is the root cause of all other namaparats. But then a very important question follows that. What is the root cause of inattention? The root cause of inattention is preoccupation with me and mine. So the cause of the inattention is that we have a preoccupation. Me, mine. You think about it. Everything that disturbs you when you're chanting, you'll find that it's all me, mine related. So, okay, me, mine. What's the root cause of preoccupation with me, mine? Body concept. Body concept. What's the cause of body concept? Aversion, hatred, and envy of Krishna. You get the point? So, we're talking about Bakasura, who is the personification of cheating religion. Are we Bakasura? If we're sitting, chanting on our japa mala, chanting the holy name, which means Krishna, please engage me in your service, but the whole session is about other things, the mind is doing other things, aren't we cheating ourselves? Aren't we cheating Krishna? Something to think about. So this is very, very important to us to understand, very fundamental thing, that namaparaya is an indication of cheating religion. And as we just read there. Now, if we don't want to cheat ourselves of this precious gift of Krishna Prem, we have to take this statement of Bhaktivinoda Thakur very seriously. The Bakasura is a personification of cheating religion, and this cheating religion is called Namaparada, offenses against the holy name of the Lord. Very amazing statement that he's making here. So I want to explore this aspect of me and mine, the preoccupation with me and mine. As we've said in previous sessions, it's always good to have a clear understanding of what we're dealing with, and then work inside out. Develop the right consciousness, develop a prayerful attitude, take help from the prayers of the acharyas, the insights of the acharyas, and then life becomes a lot easier. So let's have a look at the 10 offense against the holy name. This handout is called Bakasura and the 10th offense against the holy name. 10th offense is to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and to maintain material attachments, even after hearing so many instructions on the matter. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us that this is the worst offense to the holy name because preoccupation with a temporary gives absolutely no chance for Krishna Prem to gradually develop. Rather, it gives rise to inattention while chanting, which is a root cause of all other namaparadas. One can only free oneself of this soul-destroying offense by taking shelter of the holy name according to the sixfold process of surrender. And this is beautifully and very clearly explained in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's introductory song, the Sharanagati. I'll just read that because it's very, very beautiful. We have to understand that anything but Sharanagati is kaitava. It's cheating. We've mentioned this before. Can we lift ourselves up?
No.
Not possible. We have to be lifted up. So Gyan, Kalam, Yoga, all these things are trying to lift ourselves up. It's cheating. We can't do it. So Sharanagati is factually the only religion, as is made clear in Bhagavad Gita 1866. So let's read this very beautiful song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended from the eternal spiritual world along with his personal associates in a divine abode, incarnating in this temporary material world out of compassion for the fallen souls. In order to freely distribute the gift of ecstatic love of God, which is very difficult to obtain, he taught the path of Sharanagati, devotional surrender to the Supreme Lord. This Sharanagati is the very life of the true devotees. It's the very life of the true devotees. And the surrender to Krishna, taking full shelter of Krishna. The six ways of surrender through Sharanagati are Dainya, humility, Atmanivedana, dedication of the self, Gopitvibharana, acceptance of the Lord as one's only maintainer, the consciousness of Avashya, Rakshabe Krishna, Krishna will surely protect me, which is Vishvas, faith in Krishna's palan, protection. Bhakti Anako Mata Kayera Svikara, execution of only those acts favorable to pure devotion. And six, Bhakti Pratikul Baba Vajanangikar, renunciation of conduct averse to pure devotion. Sri Nanda Kumar, the youthful son of Nanda Maharaj, hears the prayers of anyone who takes refuge in him by the sixfold practice of surrender. Now this is an important point to take note of. We may be frustrated or depressed or disturbed because we're praying to Krishna and he's not answering our prayers. But here we get the clue. Are we following the process of surrender or not? Krishna's not so easy to approach. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prostrates himself at the feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Sanat Goswami, places a straw between his teeth and glass it with his feet in with his hands. Weeping and weeping, he tells them, I am certainly the lowest of men. Oh, please make me the worthiest by teaching me the ways of Sharanagati. So it's interesting that he's taking shelter of Rupa and Sanat and Goswami, because we're looking here at Sambandha, Gyan, Param Acharya, Sanat and Goswami, and Abhideya, Param Guru. So that means that we're looking at both Sambandha Tattva, relationship, what is a relationship, and we're looking at the process also. If those two things are in position, then obviously the goal will be achieved. Okay, so what is the mindset of someone who has, someone who is in this me and mine consciousness? We're calling him a self-cheating chanta. Quite a heavy term, but we want to drive home this point to you very, very clearly. All of this that we're reading is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Harinam Chintamani. It's an essential handbook for anybody who wants to actually advance in the chanting of the holy name. The mindset and fate of the self-cheating chanta. One unable to accept the six limbs of surrender is a prisoner of false ego, who always thinks in terms of me and mine. He proudly declares, I am the master here. This household and family are mine. I enjoy the fruits of my work, whether they are bitter or sweet. I am my own protector, and I can take care of my needs and those of my wife, brothers, sons, and daughters. I earn my living by the sweat of my own brow, and I deserve the credit for the successes I've achieved in my endeavors. This is the egotism that intoxicates those who have turned their backs on Krishna and who are consistently overestimating their own abilities and intelligence. By the power of their knowledge, they expand their industry and technology, but denying that all is ultimately in the hands of God, they end up committing wicked acts. Though they may hear the glorification of the holy name, they do not believe it. Though they may sometimes chant the holy name, they do so purely out of custom. Not surprisingly, they experience no love for Krishna from this faithless chanting. For such are the ways of the hypocrites who wrap themselves in the flag of religion. One who thus chants the Holy Name carelessly may still, may still attain some spiritual gain. But all scriptures agree that he can never attain Krishna Prem. So I'm not giving this information for us to like very diligently check everybody else. I'm giving this information so we can diligently check ourselves and make the necessary adjustments so that we can actually develop attachment for Nam. So then have a look at the back side of this, and we get a look at the active contemplation of one who's taken his chanting, and he has taken shoulder of Krishna, he has taken shoulder of Nam. What's his meditation? How does he think about life? Very sweet. If I do not stay alive, how will I be able to engage in serving the Lord? Even so, I will accept only as much as I need to keep body and soul together. Accepting whatever sense objects are in harmony with the goal of devotion is a proper way to lead one's life and is pleasing to Krishna. If ever the same sense objects become detrimental to devotional culture and are thus unpleasurable, then they should be abandoned without hesitation. There is no one other than Krishna who is truly able to protect me, and I know that he alone and no one else maintains me. I am the most fallen and useless living being in creation, and as the lowest and most unfortunate creature, I possess nothing. I am living my life within this world as Krishna's eternal servant, and I make every effort to act only in accordance with his desire. Thus, any idea that I am the doer, the giver, or the protector, or that this body, home, wife, and children are mine, that I am a brahmana, a sudra, father or husband, that I am a king or a subject, or the refuge of my offspring, is all to be given up, and Krishna may be the one and only center of my life. Krishna is the real master, and his will alone is imperative. I am ready to act only to fulfill Krishna's desire. I will not even think about acting according to my own whims. I will adjust my household affairs for the Lord's satisfaction, and if he so wishes, I will cross the material ocean. In times of both joy and sorrow, I shall always remain Lord Krishna's servitor, and because of this his desire, I will show compassion to all creatures. I will suffer or enjoy the results of my past actions according to Krishna's will, and if I become indifferent to worldly pleasures, that too will be his desire. So the point that's coming through very clearly here is I'm servant. Let Krishna arrange things. Very sweet. And actually when you practice this, at first it's a little scary, because we're so used to thinking we're in control and you know we're doing all these wonderful things. But when we start practicing this, it's such a relief. It's such a relief. Because if you're living in the house as a servant of the master, it's not your business to pay the bills. It's not your business to protect the place. He says, you do this, you do that, you do it. But it's not your headache how these things get done or when they get done. He makes the decision. So it's such a relief. Actually, to accept that Krishna is the master. I'm his servant. Any questions on this?
But the main thing is the consciousness.
Yes.
Not that now I have only relationship with Krishna, I'm not doing anything. And
no. It won't manifest like that. It won't manifest like that if we're doing it maturely and we're taking a show of their chariots, because the way they, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his Sharanagati, he makes it very clear that I'm servant, but servant means I serve. That I'm doing things for the pleasure of Krishna. But what we're pointing out here is that we want to develop a consciousness that's supportive of this. And as I said before, we have to begin from inside out. So not that we make a lot of external plans of how I'm going to, you know, practice this. It will start by beginning our day with surrendering to Guru. Surrendering to Guru and Krishna. We offer Guru and Krishna everything. Our subtle and gross body, our life force.
So amazing in one's how he really, like, with so much realization, he's saying this, that Krishna is the only one, but he had how many, 12 children? Or
13 children.
And his job, but still...
Yeah.
But he was not attached. If they would have been obstacle, he would have dropped.
Yeah, this is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. We're not worried so much about externals. We're worried about consciousness, state of heart. And we'll get on to the importance of doing that carefully a bit later on.
Yeah, good question. It seems from this, all this description of the processes of surrender, that in order to be really free from this bhakasura, another one has to be fully surrendered.
That's true. Because as I said earlier, that's a good point. That's true because as I said earlier, everything else is kaitava besides surrender. But the other aspect is that we're not independently moving towards surrender. Saranagati is a very interesting word. Gati means path. But sarana, it has a primary and secondary meaning. So, sarana, we're used to using the term surrender as translation for that. But the secondary meaning is shelter. So to the extent that you feel sheltered, to that extent you can surrender. So there has to be that relationship developing between you and Guru, between you and Krishna, that you feel comfortable to make that next step. When you see it works, you'll make a bigger step. When you see that works, you'll start walking. When you see that works, you start running. You get my point? So that it's... and it's not a concern. We have to start somewhere. Not that we can overnight become fully surrendered. You know, nothing that we do passionately will have any lasting value. It's best to work very systematically. You know, start with our prayers. Start with the bhajans of the acharyas. Apply what attracts us in our lives. See how it works. See how we need to refine it for our own circumstance. Like that. Let's have a look at some beautiful prayers by Bhaktivinoda Thakur about this. This is such a beautiful prayer. Now I'm yours. It's from the Atmanivedana section of Saranagati. We won't read about the Bengali, we'll just read the English. All there is that may be indicated by the words Aham, I, and Mama, mine, I offer at your lotus feet, O merciful Lord. I no longer consider even myself to be mine, O Lord. Now I have become exclusively yours. The soul inhabiting this mortal body has given up the false ego attached to the word I. For today, the spiritual sense of being yours has entered his heart. All my possessions, body, home, servants, brothers, friends, wife, sons, personal belongings, fencing and gateways, all of these things are now yours. For I have become your servant. I am but a mere occupant in your house. You are the owner of the house, and I am your most obedient servant. My only activity now is endeavoring for your happiness. Whatever pious or impious activities that were performed by me, either with my gross or subtle bodies, are no longer mine, O Lord, for I am now yours. My desire has become merged with your will. From this day forward, Bhaktivinoda has completely forgotten himself and has no other identity than that of being your servant. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Because we have this illusory concept that somehow or other we're separate from Krishna. And it's such a source of anxiety, it's such a source of fear. But actually we're part and parcel of Krishna. If I think this hand's separate from me, I treat it as a separate entity, am I sane or nuts? It's part of me. So in the same way, we're part of Krishna. It's natural for us to have this level of consciousness. It's natural for us to think in this way. But we're in a very unnatural circumstance. We don't think like this. But by the help of people like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, these wonderful, merciful Vaishnavas, we can start to think like this. And then we'll see that, you know, life is so amazing. I can't remember this one. I'd have to check. I was learning all of the rags for this, but I can't remember this one. Can't even check with Bubba anymore. Sorry about that. Yeah. Let's look at the other side. This is particularly in relation, because we're talking about Namaparad, I thought it'd be nice to share a beautiful prayer, again from Harinam Chintamani, both prayers, that are helpful in terms of developing our relationship with Nam and with the giver of Nam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Very beautiful. O Lord, he's talking to Mahaprabhu. This is Haridas Thakur. O Lord, be merciful and appear on my tongue in the form of your holy name. Dance there constantly, O Lord. I fall at your lotus feet and beg this of you. You may keep me in this world or take me to your abode as you please. But whatever you do with me, please always feed me the divine nectar of your holy names. You have descended to this world to distribute the holy name, so kindly also consider me one of those you intend to bless. I am the most lowly, whereas you are committed to uplifting the most fallen. This is our eternal relationship, O Savior of the Fallen. On the strength of this unbreakable connection between us, O Lord, I beg you to shower upon me the nectar of the holy name. So beautiful. And this is a very good verse to learn. This next one is a very good verse to learn in terms of before you start your chanting. Actually, it's even nice to read the whole sheet before you start your chanting. But this one, this is a beautiful prayer. Dasa pararina virayana pase kripa kora mahaprabhu majinama rase. O Mahaprabhu, please be merciful to me so that the 10 offences never touch my heart and I can always remain absorbed in the rasa of the holy name. It's such a beautiful prayer. So if we chant this prayer before we begin chanting our rounds in the morning, I think we'd notice a big difference. Very, very beautiful.
He's also saying that if someone acts more than his qualification is, that is also cheating.
Yeah, yeah,
like
definitely.
If we try to be more advanced than we are, then that means we can't really surrender.
You can't advance from an artificial platform. You have to advance, you know, like if I tell you that I'm in Agra and I'm going to Delhi, does that make any sense? I'm not in Agra. I'm in Vrindavan. So we have to, you know, we can only make advancement when we're real about where we are now. We can't advance from an artificial platform. So this is a very good reason to, again, to be humble.
Is that also like with imitation and following, like,
we
cheat ourselves?
We're very badly cheating ourselves. Very badly. And we have to realize that this cheating is the heart, a reflection of the heart of material consciousness. The heart of material consciousness is envy of Krishna. So when we're envious of someone, we try to, you know, we want to be better than them. We want to take their position. We want to put them down. So this whole mentality is very much related to envy of Krishna.
Even if one just wants to be more advanced.
Well, nothing wrong with wanting to become more advanced. We should all be striving for advancement. But we should remember that our process is descending process. And the interesting thing about descending process is that mercy does flow down. It doesn't flow up. It flows down. So if you're recognizing that I'm fallen, you have a sense of humility, then you will attract the mercy of devotees seeing you too. But if you know everything, and you're doing, you know, better than anybody else, who's going to give you advice? Who's going to give you mercy? It doesn't work like that. The mercy is flowing down. So where are you? Are you down or do you think you're up? Make sense?
It's something similar to what Prabhupada says, that if somebody's sleeping, you can wake them up, but if somebody's pretending to sleep, then you can't really do much.
Yeah, that's true. I wanted to mention, before I forget, this Hamameti, and it is the backbone, actually, of material consciousness, this me and mine. It's the very backbone of material consciousness. There's a brilliant lecture by Prabhupada on this. I forgot to give you the reference earlier, but I'll give it now before I forget again. It's Srimad Bhagavatam 325.10, November 10th, 74 in Bombay. And it's entitled Ahamameti.
3
November.
November 10th, 74, 325.10 of Bhagavatam. It's an amazing lecture. Very holistic. It really gives a very good picture of what's happening with that. The other thing that I wanted to look at, again, it's dealing with this cheating religion, because it just struck me. The Bakasura is the personification of cheating religion, and our religion is Harinam. So what does it mean for us? I wanted to look at it also in terms of preaching. This handout, again, is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it's entitled Beware of Propagating Cheating Religion. The Faithless and Harinam Initiation. Now, when you see this heading, you may say, well, this doesn't concern me. I don't have any interest in this. I'm not a guru. I don't initiate people. What's it got to do with me? But the point is that we're an institution, and we have to give recommendation letters for initiation. Most of the time, the guru may not even have a clear understanding of the caliber, the qualification of a prospective disciple. He's depending on spiritual authorities, managerial authorities. Now, if that spiritual authority or managerial authority doesn't have a clear understanding of the qualification for one to accept Nam and recommend such a person, are we doing a service or a disservice to the guru?
Disservice.
You get my point? So all of us are in the position of we preach, we counsel, like that. So we have to be very clear. If we're talking Harinam initiation, what is the actual qualification? Are we talking 4 regs and 16 rounds? Or are we talking something a bit more than that? So I found this very interesting for us to have a look at, because, we talk so much about this problem and that problem, but let's get to the root of it. A sadhu should not give the holy name to one in whom faith has not taken birth. This is the rule of Vaishnava behavior. The 9th offense against the holy name is to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. The holy name is the jiva's most valued possession. Faith means to believe that by doing nothing more than taking shelter of Krishna and the Krishna conscious process, one has already done all good deeds or religious acts one needs to. One who does not have such faith lacks the necessary qualifications to chant the holy name. People without faith who receive the holy name will simply neglect or disrespect it. If you give a hog a jewel, He will grind it into dust. And if you give a silk cloth to a monkey, he will tear it into shreds. A faithless person who takes a name dies of his offenses and immediately transforms his spiritual master into a non-devotee.
Wow.
That's a big responsibility. A person devoid of faith sometimes false-heartedly approaches a Vaishnava to beg initiation into the holy name. The sadhu sees through such an impostor every time and will refuse to give him initiation into the holy name. The sadhu says to him, "Brother, give up your false heart. Give up your desire for prestige and have faith in the holy name. I will readily give you the holy name when you have faith. Then you will easily cross the material ocean by the power of the holy name." But my dear brother, you have no right to be initiated into the chani as long as you have no real faith in the holy name. Go and hear the glories of the holy name from saints and scriptures. Then give up your desire for prestige and adopt a humble attitude. Once you have faith in the name, then an authoritative spiritual master will happily give you the great treasure of the name, my dear brother. The disciple who after initiation commits offenses to the holy name disrupts the spiritual master's absorption in spiritual life. All this talk, when a devotee, you know, who's acting as guru, falls into difficulty. Let's get real. You know, the disciple, his responsibility to the guru. We may not be able to do anything about other people, but ourselves. At least we should have that heart, that much heart for Guru. He's taken me. He's taken my weight on his shoulders. He's prepared to carry me. I'm only a baby. I can't even walk yet. I'm not going to do this to him. I'm not going to disrupt his absorption in spiritual life by my misbehavior, my lack of faith, my committing of offenses. This offense is both bad both for the spiritual master and disciple, causing both of them to fall down into hell. My dear Gohari, you bestowed such blessings on Jagai and Made. You first instilled faith in them and then gave them the holy name. O Lord, your character and activities are exemplary. May everyone faithfully follow in your footsteps. First we instill faith. Then that faith is strong, then they're ready for initiation. So something to seriously think about in terms of our relationship with Guru. And if we're preachers, we have a responsibility also to make sure that we're not just keen to get, you know, a lot of people there for the yajna, but we are keen to get a lot of qualified people there for the yajna. People that are going to actually be of service rather than disservice for the Guru, for Prabhupada's mission. Any questions on that?
Yeah. How do you instill faith?
What he's saying here, Prabhupada gives, Bhaktivinoda gives a pretty good definition at the beginning of this. He says, the holy name is a jiva's most valued possession. If we have faith in that, my most valued possession is the holy name. Faith means to believe that by doing nothing more than taking shelter of Krishna, the Krishna consciousness process, one has already done all good deeds or religious acts one needs to do. One who does not have such faith lacks the necessary qualification to shout the holy name. So we could go into it quite a lot. We don't have time today. But this idea that this is my treasure. And we get the example, we're under the shelter of Rupa and Sanatan, we're talking about this, and we get the example very clearly from Sanatan Goswami. When someone came to him with the greatest wealth, he heard he had a touchstone. And he said, yeah, Sanatan said, yeah, you can take it, no problem. He said, well, where is it? Yeah, it's over there in the rubbish. And this is a touchstone, this is not a gem, this is a touchstone. And then the man had a bit of piety and a bit of intelligence that came back and said, well, what's the real wealth? If this is in the rubbish, you must have something more precious. And then Sanatan, when he understood, he said to him, first you throw that in the river. You throw the touchstone in the river. then I'll give you to your wife. And he did it. He had the faith. But if we had this hanging on, you know, we have faith in so many things that are not real, can't give us any real benefit.
So it seems that the ability to instill faith in your person is depends on how much oneself has faith.
Of course.
And so there is like some devotees have more potency in instilling faith than others, right?
Yeah, but we have to remember that whether we have potency or not is dependent on how sincerely and seriously we're following the process. Because Shraddha to Prem is only an increase in faith. Prem is 100% faith. So, you know, it's a matter of how sincerely we're following the process that Prabhupada's given.
But also
we are not maybe yet on the high stages yet, we're still on the
we're
low
babies.
Stages.
Yeah, we're babies.
So the ability to instill faith may not be so strong.
Yeah, but then the concern should be to build that faith in ourselves. Mm. And a very strong part of that is clearing out these anattas. Anatta nivritti, the process of removing the anattas. Because firm faith, nishta, comes after that. So these anattas that we're dealing with, it's very important that we get them out. Yes, at the same time?
But without practice, the faith won't increase, no?
That goes without saying.
So the new person, how they can, means, naturally their faith is not that strong.
Yeah, but Prabhupada, I can't remember where it is, but it's in Bhagavad Gita Purport. Prabhupada says that faith is instilled in the public by hearing Harinam Sankirtan. So if we're able to find Harinam Sankirtan where you have quality, you know, like you have devotees, you know, sincere, serious devotees chanting, then just by sitting there in that kirtan, you develop further faith. Just by going to a sadhu's katha, you'll develop faith. This is very much raised by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhakti Alorka. He speaks about it a lot. That the only way that we can overcome these bad habits, like lack of faith, prejudices, all these things, the only way we can overcome this is through the association of advanced devotees. Mm. Because we see, okay, we have a habit of wasting time. We spend a day with a devotee and we realize, wow, he didn't waste any time. I really like the way he controls, you know, how he works his day. So, you know, like in this way, you see. You know, we hurt our toe and we're complaining all day. You know, we see someone who's seriously ill, they're not complaining all day, they're doing other things. You look at Prabhupada. So much illness, so much disturbance, so much anxiety, so much responsibility. You know, you couldn't tell them. I remember one story that Giriraj Maharaj told once, where he said that when they were dealing with Mr. Nair in Bombay, and it was so heavy, it was court case, all day court case, all day court case, all day court case. And it was just Prabhupada, Giriraj Maharaj and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Every day, whole day court case, whole day court case, whole day court case. And Prabhupada would come home, he'd take a bath, put on fresh clothes, go to the evening aarti and give Bhagavad Gita class. And Giriraj Maharaj and Tamal Krishna Maharaj would just be completely exhausted and have to crash out. They just couldn't do it. But Prabhupada just, you know, like this. So when you associate with such people, then, you know, you catch it. You have to remember that the bhakti is not taught. Bhakti is caught. It's an energy. It's a shakti. So you don't catch it, you know, it's not something you can be taught. It's something you catch from somebody else.
Like a disease.
Yeah, it's like a disease. It's a very good disease.
You made a very good point, Mataji. That day, I was just going back from your place and I was dragging myself. Uh-huh. And I saw Japataka Maharaj coming. Uh-huh. And I saw him and I was like, look at him. You know, and what do I have? Like maybe a little fever? And look at him in this condition. He's going all over the world still preaching. Uh-huh. It's not easy.
Yeah. But you can imagine the consciousness.
Yeah. So inspiring. I was so inspired to see that.
It's so important that we see these examples and we associate it with people that are more advanced than us. That's the quickest way to make advancement. And when you see somebody who has qualities that you want that's more advanced, that person you serve. Because if you see, that quality really attracts me, I want to be like that, then by serving that person you take on those qualities. So this means we have to be careful who we serve.
Yes, sir, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mostly these people don't want to.
That's also true. That's also true. But you have to be very clever. You have to be very clever. And one of the best ways to serve someone who is seriously practicing Krishna consciousness is to hear from them. Because by your interest in hearing, they speak. And that can be for the benefit of many people. So you're doing actually great service by asking them questions, showing an interest in what's going on.
Adhanand Prabhu said once that the best service you can do to a sadhu is take your ear. That's the best service you can do.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, how are we going for time? How many of you have to leave at 4 o'clock? Who's on a tight schedule? No, it's okay? Okay. Because this Bakasura, there's quite a lot going on here. There's a second section that we haven't even touched on yet. This last section. It is to be understood here that one should not disrespect a spotlight person just because he's accepted external formalities that are generally considered detestable. It is the eternal duty of Vaishnavas to develop the symptoms of love by associating with and serving devotees while remaining indifferent to external formalities. So this is another very important point that Prabhupada is raising here. And we're looking at this within Namaparad. He set that framework earlier in what he's saying. So the problem with this disrespect for swan-like people is that there's a high probability of committing the first and third offense to the holy name. Offending sadhus who are propagating the holy name, that means any level of preaching, and also offense to guru, dissipating his order, seeing him as an ordinary person. So in relation to this, I wanted to look at it from the perspective of how a Vaishnav who's a Kanista will see externals, and how a Madhyam will see externals. The vision is very different. The Kanista, he only sees the externals, and he judges accordingly. But the Madhyam, he's more interested in the mood, the motive, and the mindset. These three things. He wants to know what the mood of the person is. He wants to know what the motive of the person is. And he wants to know something about his general mindset. He sees the externals, but they play a very secondary role in his assessment of things. And this is actually a much safer position. Because, so often, if we go on the externals and we judge on that, we find later we're wrong. Mm. We made a wrong assessment of what was
going on.
Most of the time. Yeah, you're right, Prem. Most of the time. But if we have this mood of the Madhyam, this person is doing something that I can't relate to, but what's his motive? What's his mood? What's his mindset? And then when we have that, we're far more tolerant, and we're more peaceful, obviously. We're not going to get disturbed by everything that everyone does. Now, I had two leelas that I wanted to read, but I think because of time, we'll only read one. Who says we can read both? Okay. I find both of these leelas, which have come by the mercy of Madhavananda and Krishna Kund, actually, I didn't have a soft copy that I a hard copy, so they sent me the soft and we printed it out. But both of these stories are very interesting because they're both dealing with disrespecting someone. And the implications of that for us as sadhakas. The first one is called Yudhisthira and the Swapacha Vamika Sadhu. This story is said to be originally from the Jaimini Mahabharata. Very interesting story. After finishing the Rajasuya Yajna, Maharaj Yudhisthira arranged that he would give various gifts to all the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. He then asked Lord Krishna how he would know if all the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas were satisfied by his service. The merciful Lord put his conch shell in one place and said that if all the guests became happy, then it would automatically blow. With great care, Yudhisthira served the Brahmana and Vaishnava guests, but when he finished, the conch did not blow. The king wanted to know what was wrong, so he requested Krishna's help. Krishna told him that there was a very humble devotee named Swapacha Valmika who was staying just outside of the city. He was an untouchable person who was not properly treated at the Rajasuya Yajna. Immediately, Yudhisthira sent Bhima and Arjun to find that devotee and to invite him to the royal palace the next day. He then ordered Draupadi to make various types of prasad presentations for him. Bhima and Arjun quickly went searching for that devotee. They found him outside the capital in the forest. He was an untouchable outcast. As soon as Swapacha Valmika saw the two brothers, he immediately offered his pranams to them. He prayed to them and cried, asking them why they had personally come to call him to the palace when they could have sent one of their servants. He told them it was not proper for the king's brothers to personally take the trouble to come there. Swapacha Valmika then worshipped the two brothers and with folded hands waited for their order. Bhima said that the king of Hastinapur was now inviting him to come for prasad to his royal palace the next day. He must go without delay. Hearing Bhima's words, Swapacha Valmika began to cry and said, "How is it possible for a person like me to go to the royal palace and take prasad there?" He then told them that he had been taking prasad from the Rajasuya Yajna. He humbly explained that he had been taking the remnants from the thrown-out leaf plates of the Vaishnavas, Brahmanas, Munis and Rishis. He happily expressed his satisfaction by taking such prasad and humbly requested that they not invite him to the royal palace, as he was not worthy of that. However, Bhima insisted that he must come the next day. With much humility and fear, the next day, the Swapacha arrived at the palace and first took his pranams to all the members of the royal families. Maharaj Yudhisthira greeted him with great respect and wanted to wash his feet. The Swapacha Sadhu felt very uncomfortable and rejected the idea, saying that he was not worthy of that. He then went to his most worshipable Supreme Lord Sri Krishna and again offered his obeisances. After Krishna requested the Swapacha, Yudhisthira washed the feet of the humble sadhu. He was then offered a nice seat and various types of wonderful prasad. Draupadi had personally cooked, and she had made many different types of preparations. They placed these in front of the Swapacha sadhu for him to take. To everyone's surprise, the Swapacha devotee mixed all the various types of prasad together, the sweet, sour, pungent, etc., and then began to honor it. Seeing this, Draupadi was not very happy. She had spent the entire day preparing this prasad. Seeing that Swapacha did not take the items separately and instead mixed everything together and ate it, she was thinking, "He really is a Swapacha. He really is an outcast." After the sadhu finished eating, Maharaj Yudhisthira gave him ample donations and a respectful farewell. However, after his departure, the conch still did not blow. In great anxiety, Yudhisthira asked the Lord why that was. Krishna replied that someone had made an offense to the Svapacha. Everyone was quiet, and the five brothers said, "We didn't commit any offense to the Svapacha." However, Draupadi was silent. Finally, she said, "With great labor, I cooked for him, but that Svapacha did not appreciate my cooking, and he mixed everything together and ate it. Therefore, in my mind, I may have made some mistake." Krishna said, "Call him again and ask him why he did that. Why he didn't eat everything separately like we do." Again they called for the Svapacha Sadhu. Yudhisthira Maharaj asked him, "Why did you mix all the prasad together and eat it? Is there any reason to your behavior?" With folded hands, the Svapacha told them, "Prasad means the mercy of the Lord. It has already been enjoyed by the Lord. He is the enjoyer, not I. I am his servant. I have to honor his remnants with respect and be careful not to commit any offense. I should not enjoy his remnants with feelings of like and dislike. If I don't like the chutney, I won't eat it. Whereas if I like the sweet rice very much, I'll eat a lot of it. Please tell me, have I made a mistake?" His devotional reply opened the eyes of the Pandavas. Yudhisthira Maharaj, along with Draupadi, begged forgiveness for their offense. Right after that, the conch began to blow very loudly, confirming that the king's sacrifice was now a complete success. It's a very beautiful story, because we have a certain tendency to think that somebody that's not externally well situated is not realized. And quite often we make offenses because of that. So this story makes it very, very clear that maybe we should adjust our way of dealing with circumstances and people. The second one is a story about Krishna Priya Thakurani, an offense that was committed to her. And it's from Narahari Chakravarti's Narottam Vilas. Very beautiful story.
It's a very long reading. You'll be okay.
I'll give it a try. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once very carefully gave a Govardhan Shila to Raghunath Das Goswami. No one can begin to describe the bliss that Das Goswami felt while worshipping the holy rock. When Das Goswami left this world, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami became absorbed in serving that Shila with great attention and care. When Kaviraj Goswami left this world, then Sri Mukunda Das sank into the ocean of Prem simply by serving that Shila, and he worshipped it for quite some time thereafter. Now I will elaborate about how the Govardhan Shila was passed down. The most dear devotee of Sri Lokanath Goswami, Sri Thakur Narottam Mahasai. Narottam's disciple was Chakravarti Ganga Narayan. Ganga Narayan's wife was named Vishnu Priya. Her heart was happiest when she was absorbed in the rasa of serving Sri Govindadev. Her daughter, Krishna Priya, was just like pure devotion personified. Indeed, she was so devotional that she even earned the title Radhakund Vasi Thakurani. She left Gaudadesh and wandered all over Braj. Observing strict self-imposed rules and regulations, she settled at Radhakund. At this time, Sri Mukunda Das observed her wonderful character, and he continually praised her in great happiness. When Mukunda Das became very old, he once ate some bad food and developed a stomach disorder. But Krishna Priya put him on such a diet that cured the malady and gave him good appetite as well. Mukunda Das would tell her again and again, "You show affection for me just like a mother." One day he said, "I cannot fathom the great devotion you have for Lord Krishna. Therefore, you are certainly fit for the transcendental mellows of this Govardhan Shila." Saying this, he handed over the sacred Shila of Das Goswami to her. A few days later, Mukunda Das left this world. Thus Thakurani continued rendering service to Raghunath Goswami's Govardhan Shila. She had such a loving devotion for him. Without factually understanding such affection, I cannot really say anything concrete about it. This is very interesting. It is practically impossible to relate to the activities of Krishna Priya Thakurani. Harinam was constantly present on her tongue. To whomever she showed her mercy, that person would have all their desires fulfilled. But if anyone offended her, he would be ruined. One day, a devotee named Rupa Kaviraj committed an offense to her. Consequently, he became afflicted with leprosy and died miserably, becoming a ghost. I will give a brief outline of what happened here. Rupa Kaviraj was born in a very elevated family and was accustomed to saintly behavior. I will describe what kind of guru kripa he received by explaining the different guru-disciple relationships were current at the time. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dear devotee is the merciful Sri Lokanath Goswami. His disciple is Narottam Mahasaya. We've said this before. His disciple was Ranga Narayan. His disciple was Sri Krishna Charan. His disciple was Rupa Kaviraj, the godbrother of Vishwanath's guru Raman Chakravarti. Sri Rupa Kaviraj travelled with his spiritual master from Gaura to Braj. He had very firm faith that Guru and Krishna are one. Receiving the order of his spiritual master, he resided at Radhakund. Previously he had studied different branches of knowledge such as Sanskrit grammar, and subsequently he developed a sincere desire to study the scriptures headed by Srimad Bhagavatam. Taking permission from his guru, he thus began to study the literature of devotion under the guidance of Srimad Kundadas. Rupa Kaviraj studied the books of Sri Rupa Goswami, Bhagavanath Das Goswami and others, and thus he became constantly absorbed in tasting and relishing the divine mellows of Prem Bhakti. All of the residents of Radhakund felt very happy to see him thus engaged. Within a few short days, Sri Mukundadas awarded Rupa Kaviraj with divine transcendental knowledge. Later, however, after Mukundadas left this world, an amazing thing happened. Just a few days after Mukundadas disappeared, this Rupa Kaviraj committed a grave offense unto Srimati Krishna Priya Thakurani. One day, as Rupa Kaviraj was reciting the Bhagavatam, all the Vaishnavas assembled to hear that transcendental narration. Krishna Priya Thakurani arrived in great happiness. Being honored by everyone, she was offered a courteous welcome with great delight by the assembled devotees. However, Rupa Kaviraj did not show her any respect. Nevertheless, she didn't think anything of it, but simply sat there, perfectly content and jubilant, to hear Sri Krishna Katam. After reciting the Bhagavatam for a short while, Rupa Kaviraj looked up and said to Krishna Priya Thakurani, "How is it possible for you to do two things at the same time? It is greatly disturbing to see that while listening to Bhagavat recited by me, your tongue is chanting the holy names. How can you do this?" Thakurani replied, "It is simply the habit of this tongue to constantly chant." She didn't do it, it's just her tongue constantly chanted independently, spontaneously. "It is simply the habit of this tongue to chant constantly. It doesn't impede my hearing in the least." Upon this, hearing this, Rupa Goswami just sat there and became overwhelmed with furious anger. That very moment he was ruined. First he developed a contemptible mentality towards his own spiritual master, then likewise towards Sri Krishna Chaitanya Viraga, the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Vaishnavas. He became bereft of the supremely rare path of pure devotion. Being pinched by his offense, he was robbed of the prem avesh, the overwhelming absorption and ecstatic love that he was feeling previously. In all ways, he increased his puffed-up false conception of himself, thinking he was very important and distinguished. Gradually, he committed many, many more offences unto others. Concocting his own erroneous philosophy, he became most troubled, and thus he embarked on the selfish path, followed by those who are envious of the Supreme Lord. The lustre of his body faded, and his five digestion decreased. His lack of luster became visible in every limb. Finally, he realized he was afflicted with leprosy, which was spreading quickly throughout his entire body. Within a few days, Rupa Kaviraj's envious activities became very clear to everyone. Reduced to a ruined, decaying wretch, he fled back to Gaudadesh. He tried returning to his Gurudev's ashram by deceitfully pretending that nothing was wrong. But everyone there already knew the whole story, and he was greatly embarrassed. The story of Rupa Kaviraj rejecting his guru spread all around, and people were talking about it everywhere. Thus humiliated and utterly ruined, he felt very uneasy in Gauda. So he fled to Orissa and stayed in Kuryagram. Living there, his body gradually became eaten up and totally devastated by the leprosy. Being severely afflicted with pain, he finally died after terrible suffering. Becoming a ghost, he began to seize and haunt other persons who also offended Vaishnavas. Whomever he haunted would immediately understand, "Oh, I've committed an offense." Whenever someone asked me, if he was such a qualified devotee, then how is it possible for him to have suffered this terrible outcome? Then I reply, by committing Vaishnava Aparad, what can you expect? Very interesting. So it gives you some idea of how serious it is to our devotional kripa if we're involved in such disrespect of swan-like people. Both of them, swan-like people. But externally, you may not see that. Okay. Begin our surgery by first discussing Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. His presentation of Bakasura. Anybody have anything they'd like to say about that?
I was just thinking that both Bakasur and Agasur were like brothers, and they both swallowed Krishna. So that was interesting that, you know, both the brothers did the same thing.
Runs in the family. Okay. Anybody else?
I have some. This Agasura is a chiton, like he's.
But now we're talking Bakasura.
Bakasura is a witch bird, like.
He's a duck.
Duck. Mm. Big means.
Very big.
Big duck.
Yeah, like a mountain.
Like a mountain.
Yeah, so we're talking about him right now. Very nasty fellow who is using his beaks to try and kill Krishna. Anybody else have anything to say? What I found interesting, and it's actually there with all the demons, but it struck me this time, that we were talking earlier about me and mine, and that's completely opposed to the principle that's working in Braj. In Braj, it's Krishna and Krishna's, not me and mine. So we see that when Prabhupada explains that the boys and the cows, they went to the Jamuna to drink. So the cows didn't say to the boys didn't say to the calves, "You wait 1 minute, we're going to drink." They drank together. And I found that so sweet. There wasn't that kind of discrimination that we're so used to. But then, you just read about that, and all of a sudden, Bakasura appears. Suddenly and immediately he appears. Oh, bah! You know. And he immediately attacks and tries to kill Krishna. So it's such a, you know, two sides of it, you know, it's not two sides, it has two opposites.
Contrast.
This contrast, this beautiful scene where of harmony and everyone, we're all Krishna's servants. You may be a cow, if I'm a coward boy, but we're both Krishna's servants. No problem. Let's go and take water from the Jamuna. But then this guy comes in and, you know, he's got a different idea. He disturbs the whole scenario. Okay. I just wanted to make that point. So let's read from Bhagavad Gita. I like his insights. He gives some interesting understandings of what's going on in a more holistic picture, past lives and things like that. One day, as he was herding the cows in the company of Balaram and the boys, Krishna saw a great duck demon by the Yamuna shore. His form like a white mountain, his feet gigantic, its quacking like the rumbling of clouds, and its beak like a thunderbolt. The demon swallowed Lord Krishna as the boys fled. All the boys wept as if they had lost their lives. All the demigods came out and cried, "Alas, alas!" Now this is very interesting. We're talking about cheating religion. And you just have a look here. The demigods tried to kill Bakasura. They wanted Krishna saved. They tried to kill Bakasura in so many ways. He lost two wings, he lost a leg, you know, so many things, but he was so determined. He just get up and keep... Only Krishna could kill him. So that's why when we're dealing with cheating religion, we can't get rid of this anatta by ourselves. We have to take shelter of Krishna, and Krishna has to kill it. The Bakasura that's in our hearts, Krishna has to kill this person. You listen to this, it's really, really amazing. Okay, so the demigods, they're calling out. And bringing his very powerful thunderbolt, Indra struck the demon. With that blow, the demon fell, but he did not die. He again stood up. Then Brahma became angry, and with his Brahma danda, he struck the demon. With that blow, the demon fell and was unconscious for 48 minutes. Still the powerful demon did not die. He shook his body, yawned, stood up again, and roared like a monsoon cloud. Then with his trident, Lord Shiva struck the great demon. One wing was cut off, but still that very fearful demon did not die. With his wind weapon, Vayu struck the demon duck. The demon flew away and then returned. With his Yama danda, Jamarad struck the demon. With that blow, the very powerful duck did not die. Indeed, the Yama danda became broken, but the duck was not hurt. Then powerful Surya approached. The archer Surya struck the demon duck with 100 sharp arrows flying to his wing. The duck did not die. With a sharp sword, Kavera attacked the demon. His second wing was cut off, but the great demon did not die. With his ice weapon, Soma struck the great duck. Tormented by the cold, the demon fainted, but then again stood up. With his fire weapon, Agni struck the great duck. Even though his feathers were burned to ashes, the very wicked demon did not die. Varuna bound him with a rope and dragged him across the earth. From the dragging, the great sinner was hurt, but did not die. Next, powerful goddess Bhadrakali struck him with a mace. With that blow, he fainted and fell into a deep coma. His head broken, the very wicked and powerful demon duck rose, shook his body, and roared like a thundering cloud. Then Kartikeya threw his kachi weapon at him. Although one of his feet was cut off, that demon, the best of birds, did not die. Roaring like thunder, the demon angrily chased the demigods, and with his sharp beak made them flee. The demigods flew into the sky, and the demon, filling the directions with a great sound, flew after them. No wings, but he's still flying. That's pretty amazing. At that time, all the Devrishis, Brahma Rishis, Brahmanas offered blessings to Nandasam Krishna. Then, from inside the duck, Krishna expanded his glorious form. His throat broken, the great duck at once vomited Krishna out. When the duck came to catch him in his beak, Krishna grasped the duck's tail and threw him to the ground. The duck stood up again and opened his beak. With both hands, Krishna split the duck's beak as an elephant breaks the branch of a tree. At this, the demon died. A light left his body and entered the Lord Krishna. With shouts of victory, the demigods showered flowers. Filled with wonder, all the gopis embraced Krishna and said, friend, you've been saved from the mouth of death. After killing the duck, Krishna, cheerful and singing as he went, returned with the boys and calves to his father's palace. When they entered the house, the boys told what Sri Krishna had done, and when the people heard it, they became filled with wonder. Sri Bahulasra said, "Who was this demon before? Why did he become a duck? Why was he able to enter Sri Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Master of all?" Sri Narad said, "O King, he was a demon named Utkala, who was High Griva's son. He defeated many demigods in battle, and he stole Indra's parasol. Stealing from the kingdoms of many human kings, for 100 years, this powerful demon ruled a kingdom full of all opulence. One day, the demon came near Jajali Muni's leaf hut, at the place where the Ganga meets the ocean. Casting a fish hook into the water, the demon caught a fish. Although forbidden again and again from fishing, the wicked-hearted demon gave no respect to the sage's words. The perfect sage Jajali cursed him, saying, 'O demon, because you eat fish like a duck, you become a duck.' In a moment, the demon became a duck. He lost his pride, his arrogance, everything gone. He fell with folded hands at the sage's feet and spoke to him. Utkala said, 'O sage, save me. I did not know the power of your austerities. The wise know that association with great saints like yourself is the door to liberation. Saints like yourself see friends and enemies equally. They either honor and dishonor, gold and cloud of earth, and happiness and unhappiness are all the same. O sage, what does one not attain by seeing great saints? By seeing them, one attains Brahma's kingdom and Indra's position. O Jajali, O tiger among sages, what is the use of the three goals of life? By the mercy of great saints, one can attain the Supreme Brahman.' Sri Narad said, 'Being pleased, Jajali Muni, who had performed austerities for 60,000 years, spoke to him. Sri Jajali said, "In the Vaivashvaka Manvantara, during the 28th Yuga cycle at the end of Dwapara Yuga, in Bharatvaj and Mathura in the cycle of Braj, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will herd many cows in Vrindavan forest. At that time, you will enter Lord Krishna's presence. Of this, there is no doubt. Even by hating him, many demons, such as Hiranyaksha, have already attained the Supreme, and so will you." Narad said, "In this way, by Jajali's blessing, the demon Utkala became Bakasura and was liberated by Krishna. What is not possible by the association of great saints?"
I was just thinking that it seems all the demons who got killed by Krishna, they were actually blessed by some sage. So really, without devotees, you cannot get Krishna's mercy, no?
Fact.
Like I heard today, Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita in 16th chapter, and Prabhupada says, here it seems Krishna is not kind to demons, but he said, but they also get his mercy when they get killed by him.
Mm-hmm.
But not every demon can get killed by Krishna, no?
Mm.
So.
Yeah, the mercy of the Vaishnavas is definitely a big factor. That's very true. Any other comments on that?
I was thinking the same thing, that all these demons who got mercy of the Lord actually did not do anything good themselves. Only that they got the mercy of a devotee or a very pious person, that they were eventually they got Krishna. So it was all mercy of a devotee that, you know, made them benefit. They themselves had not done anything pious or anything Krishna conscious or anything like that.
Yeah. It gives us hope, right?
Yes. Yes.
And also a path that, you know, one should strive for mercy of Vaishnavas.
Definitely.
And that Sanskrit baka, it means in Hindi that bagul, no? That is like a...
Babula.
Babula. That is a bird.
That pretends like Babula Bhat.
Means how it is said, he cheating religion. That word, Hindi word for that bird, that is used also for like a cheating devotee.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that bird stands like that. It looks very saintly because it seems to stand on one leg. So it's like austerity, but actually it's not.
It's only waiting for the fish. And pretending to be a sadhu, but he's only meditating on the fish.
That's interesting.
That is the same thing. No? Outside he's a devotee, but
not he, us.
Actually, for a pretender, like a person who's pretending to be a devotee, this word is very commonly used in Hindi, Bagula Bhakt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Bagula Bhakt.
That you know,
pretending devotee.
Interesting. That's for sure. Yeah. Wow. Okay, let's hear from another Vrindavan Chandra. Another dimension on the same leela.
After taking breakfast, Krishna met his playmates and prepared to leave for the day. Following the principles of Vaishya Dharma, Krishna and his powerful brother Balaram collected the calves and went out to the forest every day. They brought the thirsty calves to a reservoir of clear, cool water and left them on the banks to feed on the fresh sprouts and soft shoots of grass. At that time, Krishna, the beautiful, enchanting cowherd boy who performs wonderful pastimes and protects the whole creation, saw an unusual demon in the shape of a gigantic duck. Kamsa had sent this demon to kill Krishna. He was known as Bakasur, the demoniac brother of Putana. As a good tantric can see the future, Bakasur understood that Krishna fit the description of Kamsa's dreaded enemy. Bakasur immediately opened his ferocious beak in an attempt to swallow the Lord. His lower beak lay on the ground and his upper beak pierced the heavenly planets. It seemed he intended to devour all living entities on earth and in heaven. Krishna's friends felt great anxiety as they beheld that fearful monster. The playmates of Krishna said, "Oh brother, this creature cannot be a bird because he's about to swallow us all in his deadly mouth. Seeing his aggressive behavior, it must be a demon in the form of a huge duck, so we should quickly run from here. His body is taller than the peak of Mount Kailash. It will be very difficult for us to escape from this gaping mouth." To assure his dearest friends of his protection, Krishna glanced at them with a delicate smile that captivated their minds and satisfied their hearts. Krishna, the undaunted one who awards fearlessness to everyone in creation, smiled at the boys and moved near the demon. In a second, that dreadful duck swallowed Krishna. Seeing this seemingly irreversible calamity, Balaram and the boys exclaimed, "Alas! Alas! What a disaster!" The demigods observing from the sky fell unconscious. As a camel spits out fresh mango leaves immediately after chewing them, or a man experiences a fiery feeling in his sinuses if he takes water up his nose, similarly that demon felt a burning sensation from swallowing Krishna and tried to spit him out. The demon suffered immense distress as Krishna simultaneously constricted and expanded his throat with a violent force. While rapidly flapping his wings in an attempt to eject Krishna from his throat, the demon felt his life air rushing out of his heart. Krishna escaped from the mouth of the demon just as the moon slips out from the mouth of Rahu, or a sun escapes from the grip of a dense monsoon cloud. Krishna appeared like a lion cub coming out from the mouth of a mountain cave, or a devotee attaining deliverance from the dark well of material existence. Surprisingly, Krishna's clothing and ornaments had not become the least bit sullied from passing through the saliva-filled throat of that demon. Looking fresh and beautiful, Krishna whispered some loving words to awaken his friends, who had fallen unconscious on the banks of the Yamuna. But then, renewing his deadly attack, Bakasura tried to pinch Krishna in his beaks. Krishna grabbed the demon's beak and split them in half, just as easily as a child splits a blade of grass. Rivers of blood flowed in all directions. The two pieces of his dead body looked like twin mountain peaks lying on the ground. The denizens of higher planets happily showered flowers from Nandakanan, that's Indira's celestial gardens, upon Bakari, Krishna. Celebrating the victory, the Gandharva and Kinnara women danced and cried in jubilation. Their teardrops, which washed away their kajal and fell through the sky, appeared like celestial honeybees, dancing amidst the flowers falling from heaven. Dundubi drums resounded everywhere, proclaiming the triumph. Astonished by this wonderful pastime of Krishna, Vaivashtamanu and many other sages offered prayers. Witnessing this transcendental feat, Krishna's playmates immersed in divine joy. The boys felt that they had regained their lives upon seeing Krishna, the lord of their hearts, walking confidently like a royal bull elephant. Being late afternoon, the cowherd boys collected their calves and returned to Vrindavan along with a charming friend. The cowherd boys raced to their homes to tell their parents all about Krishna's remarkable pastimes. Though tired and breathing heavily, they tried their best to explain Krishna's exploit. Due to exhaustion, their voices choked up, but their mispronounced words sounded very sweet and satisfying to their parents. The pleasure of hearing about Krishna's killing Bakasura quickly removed everyone's anxiety. The young Gopa said, "Mother, listen to the amazing adventure we had today. You will be surprised to hear how Krishna showed his incredible strength. With our own eyes, we saw him easily vanquish a formidable demon. Driven by false ego, Bakasura tried to kill us. His extremely sharp beaks felt as hot as fire, but just using his bare hands, which are softer and cooler than lotus flowers, Krishna broke the demon's beaks as easily as a child splits a blade of viran grass. By killing that demon, Krishna finished all his devious acts." The sweet talks of the cowherd boys filled their mother's ears with nectar. At first, Mother Yashoda felt afraid upon hearing that the demon tried to swallow the boys. As she heard more about her son's expertise in killing that awesome demon, Yashoda and other mothers felt slightly relieved and smiled mildly. Yashoda thought to herself, "Alas, even though I have left Mahavan to escape the harassment of demons, they are still attacking my son. My son is very bold and restless. But what can I do and where can I go? By destiny I am confused and cannot understand the plan of providence. After bathing and feeding Krishna his evening meal, Yashoda, the abode of maternal affection, said, "From now on, just stay home. Please do not go out to the forest. We have so many men to do this work, so you can stop tending the cows. You need not take so much trouble for this." Krishna replied, "But Mother, actually all these stories about my heroic exploits are just lies. Do not worry so much about all these things."
Okay, let's hear from Gopal Champa. When Kamsa heard through spies that Krishna had killed Vasasura, he blinked repeatedly and fainted. His ministers revived him with great difficulty. He then began to consult with his ministers. "I have sent many skillful, proud people to injure Krishna, but none of them have been able to produce auspiciousness. Though I request them to fool him, my plans are thwarted and they are killed. What should I do?" The minister said, "O Lord, we can take the help of Bakasura, who is very powerful. Those who know him understand that he is the most wicked of all." Kamsa said, "Yes, yes, that's a very good idea. He's my best friend. Please send him here." Cruel Bakasura, protected by Kamsa, the tormentor of devotees, knowing that Krishna would come to the place called Bakastala at Nandeshwar near a lake, fixed himself there like a moving peak of a mountain. he thought that Krishna would think that he was a mountain with a gaping mouth resembling a cave. The cowherd boys, along with Krishna, grazed the calves, made them drink water, and keeping them on the bank, drank water and bathed each other. Getting out of the water, they dressed themselves. They spread out to collect flowers to decorate themselves. While picking flowers, they saw Bakasura. The boys thought, "Is this a mountain in the distance? How has it come here?" "We didn't see it yesterday. I see it has a peak. It looks as if Indra has struck it in anger with his thunderbolt. I think it's not a mountain, but some type of animal, which must have done something wrong. It's hanging its head. I think it's a crane with a sharp beak and frightening appearance." Krishna said, "It looks like a bird, but doesn't behave like a bird. Is it some new type of crane? Which is sitting here just like a mountain?" Desiring to come closer to it, Krishna began to speak with deceptive words. "As a baby snake, poisonous even to touch, approaches a frog out of curiosity, lotus-eyed Krishna, surrounded by the boys holding raised sticks, approached the beak of the crane." And Krishna acted as if he didn't know what the demon was about, but actually he did. As a frog tries to swallow a young snake, Bakasura tried to swallow Krishna, but could not close his mouth. Oh, by this action, which was like dense darkness covering light, he caused great disturbance to Balaram and Sridham and the other cowherd boys. Just as Balaram, for knowing Krishna's strength, experienced pain when he saw Krishna try to deliver Rukmini, he experienced pain on seeing Bakasura's actions. But since Krishna was like a blazing fire in his throat, Bakasura spat him out quickly. Since Krishna would burn his insides, the demon understood it was impossible to swallow him. Like a fool, Bakasura then tried to pinch him with the tip of his beak. But just as Bhima killed Jarasandha, or just as a child uproots a bamboo tree, by his unlimited strength, Krishna destroyed Bakasura's beak by using only his hands, and in this way killed him. When Bakasura swallowed Krishna, the boys and Balaram fainted. When he spat out Krishna, they became conscious. Both the devatas and the boys then became jubilant. When the killer of Vatsasura killed Bakasura, the devatas began dancing and playing musical instruments. Picking jasmine flowers from the Nandana garden, in great joy they showered these flowers continuously. Observing Krishna's intention and looking on in surprise, they laughed at Bakasura as Krishna spoke. "Oh fool, when you tried to swallow me with your beak, I helped you. Before your limbs were torn apart by that, what fault is mine?" When Krishna emerged from Baka, the boys immediately regained their life. How can one describe their tears, trembling, choked voices, and changing of complexion? Being greatly agitated, they immediately went to the lake and bathed. Then, leaving the place and taking the calves, they departed for their houses. Returning to their homes, they described the actions of Bakasura and how Krishna killed him. On hearing the descriptions, the people first became frightened and their hair stood on end. But then they became joyful, gathered together, and went to Nanda's house. Weeping and seeing and touching Krishna's lotus face, they talked amongst themselves about all the demons killed, including Bakasura.